Hi there, and welcome to my soothing podcast. I am Sergey Bloom. Today is Sunday, April 28, 2024. All three girls had a sleepover, not just for the one night, but two nights. Friday to Saturday, Saturday to Sunday. That's today. And it was awesome. It was a successful sleepover. There's been lots of eating and cooking, but mainly I was doing that part. The girls were playing and dancing and eating and doing something that I don't even know, but they were having fun. They were having a great time, and they were also taking care of dog Lando. Unfortunately, dog Lando has been going through some tummy difficulty times, and the girls would periodically take him out just to make sure that Lando doesn't have an accident. And that's very nice of them. I'm very thankful they did that. It was very helpful. As for cooking, I've been trying to spoil them, I think. And so I was trying to cook as many things as I could, which isn't many, but it's time-consuming, just to sort of give them a variety of things to eat. One of the things is called hachapuri. And I may have talked about this in some other podcast, but it's a dish that comes from the Republic of Georgia. Now, this is not the same as the state of Georgia in the United States. The Republic of Georgia is sort of near the Mediterranean, bordering Middle East. The dish is kind of a cross of various cuisines. The Republic of Georgia for centuries has been at the center of a number of cuisines as people migrated around the world. So it's a wonderful cuisine, delicious. There's Mediterranean influence, there's Middle Eastern influence. The Republic of Georgia for many decades used to be part of the Soviet Union, and Soviet Union has rich cuisines as well, and that probably influenced the Georgian cuisine to some extent, although I think the Georgian cuisine influenced the Soviet cuisine more than anything else. So now hachapuri is a kind of dish that most likely exists in many cuisines around Europe and Mediterranean region and Middle East. Essentially, it's a cheese pie. In fact, it could easily fall into the pizza category. It's just a different take on it. And, you know, it's you make dough. You also mix usually a couple of different cheeses together. And there's some other things you can do, but essentially that's it. You shape the dough when it's ready into this traditional shape resembling kind of a boat. And you load that boat with cheese and it in the oven. It goes and it bakes for whatever amount of time. And that particular version of Hachapuri usually gets an egg yolk in the center. And it stays in the oven with the egg yolk maybe an extra minute or two to just slightly warm up the egg yolk. And the whole thing gets taken out, served on a plate. Usually also put a couple of slices of butter on top. And the traditional way of eating Hachapuri is to break off the ends of this boat, so to speak, which are essentially pieces of bread, and dunk it into cheese and swirl it together, an egg, and you just eat it, and it's delicious. So I made that. Took some time to learn to make the dough. It's probably easier to go to the store and buy ready-made dough. The kind of dough that you would probably use to make a pizza napolitana. Pizza from Napoli has a specific way of making the dough. And I think that's the tastiest dough for this Hachapuri dish. Although, traditionally, the dough for Hachapuri can be made with, oftentimes, not just olive oil as Neapolitan pizza dough, but also some butter, so both. Then sometimes you might see someone using milk for the dough as well. Obviously, there's the flour, the yeast, the salt, the water. Those are the basic ingredients. But there's also the olive oil. That's the same for Neapolitan pizza. And in the case of Hachapuri, oftentimes also the butter, or I've seen milk instead of the butter. So, you know, minor regional differences. So I made that for the kids. They loved it. It was delicious. It came out really, really big. In fact, it was so humongous that it took three yolks in the center, lined up. Not even close to each other, but it was so long, this Hachapuri, that I could fit three yolks with, I don't know, a couple of 3 inches of space in between, floating in that cheese. And now the cheese, of course, also, once the dish is ready for eating, is kind of, it's all melted, but it's not liquidy. You can take that bread, break it off, and dunk it in the center and kind of pull the cheese onto the bread and then put it in your mouth and enjoy. So there was that. Then there's something called sirniki. And that's as far as I know, more of a Russian cuisine. And that is based on what in the United States we would call, I would guess, farmer's cheese. I've heard people call it curds in whey. Not sure if I've ever seen that anywhere, but I have seen farmer's cheese in the United States, and it does resemble what I'm talking about. This product, this farmer's cheese product, is popular all over Scandinavia, and it's a staple in Russian cuisine and was a staple all over Soviet Union. But it's a dairy product. If you were to take, say, fresh milk, the fresher the better. In fact, if you could go and milk a cow and take that milk and, say, leave it in a clean container overnight, it might turn into this sort of, I can't even describe it, sort of almost gelatinized mass that you could eat with a spoon. And there's a name for that in Russian, and in fact, it's a product in and of itself. It's kind of tart to taste, probably resembles yogurt. Now, imagine you take that kind of jiggly mass and very gently heat it for a while and pretty much start treating that like the first stages of making cheese. And you take some implement, just like they do with cheese, and you start cutting that heated mass into little cubes. Exactly how they do with cheese, which is a thing to do, cutting it into cubes, simply to allow the heat to reach every part of that mass. That's why you cut it up like that. So everything heats up evenly, is what I'm trying to say. And you continue doing that. And then it takes practice to know at which point you stop the heating process. And then you dump the whole thing through cheesecloth. And if you'd like, you can catch the whey in a container, because you can use whey for various things, baking and non-baking. And the solids get trapped in the cheesecloth. And the solids keep kind of pushing the liquid out under its own weight. And as the liquid escapes from the solids, basically the curds being separated from the whey, you end up with these curds that can be slightly wetter, slightly drier. That's up to you. The longer you keep it in the cheesecloth and the longer you allow the liquid to escape, the drier the product you'll have. But that product essentially would be what you'd call farmer's cheese. You could eat it with a spoon. You could put it in a fridge and then eat it chilled straight out of the fridge. You could mix it the way people like to do it sometimes in Russia. Very simply, take some of that farmer's cheese, put it in a bowl, maybe a tablespoon of sour cream on top, start chowing it down. Kids sometimes like to maybe put some jam in there as well. Other kids might sprinkle some sugar on top of the sour cream. You know, the sky's the limit. Be creative. And it's healthy. It's very nutritious. It's got very high protein content. Calcium and lots of other things. And moms like to feed it to children. to build their bones. The same way that, you know, we like to have children drink milk. Only curds are, I guess, more concentrated since you've separated the liquid. So, back to this syrniki. That's a Russian word. It's based on the word syr. Syr, syrniki. Syr is Russian for cheese. So syrniki is kind of like cheese things. And farmer's cheese is the cheese part, the one I just described. And you take this farmer's cheese product, add some flour, usually some sugar, a bit of salt. I've seen people add various other things, one egg sometimes. Seen people add sour cream. I've seen people add yogurt. I've seen people add kefir, which is fairly widely available in the United States at the stores. Sort of a yogurt drink. So it's a mixture of those things. But at the base of it all is this farmer's cheese, right? And you mix it all together pretty well. And the point is to get a pretty stiff consistency, but not too stiff. So the trick is to watch the amount of flour that goes in. And it's best to let that mixture sit in the fridge overnight. And then you slowly pan fry these things. You shape them into little pucks in your hands. You could, for example, sometimes coat your hands with some oil, grab an amount of the mixture, make it into a ball, put it into a pan that's not too crazy hot. And kind of very, very gently press that ball down in the pan a little, so it's kind of like a puck. Not very large, maybe a couple of inches in diameter at the most. And you slowly fry them. And the reason for, or pan fry them, the reason for slow pan frying is to not overcook the farmer's cheese, because high heat can kind of make it tough, I guess. Maybe almost sort of rubbery, to taste rubbery in texture. So the trick is not to go too fast. And of course, I'm not really giving a detailed recipe here, but that's the general principle. And those are delicious too, and kids like it. And, you know, when you serve it, you can drench it in powdered sugar. You can also serve it with sour cream and jams and whatever, really. In fact, there's a restaurant in town that specializes in sort of Russian home cooking, but it's sort of home cooking in name, but it's fancied up. It's beautifully presented, and clearly the people who work in the kitchen at that restaurant are big-time pros. They know what they're doing, and everything comes out absolutely phenomenally delicious. And syrniki is on the menu. And I have made syrniki for the kids during this sleepover. And they were all right. They were not bad. But I'm very much inspired by the Syrniki that we've tried at this Russian restaurant, and I'm not there yet, but hopefully one day I'll get there. So that was another thing they ate. And when I served it to them, I took a big plate and coated the bottom of the plate with strawberry juice that was a byproduct of cooking strawberries briefly when I was making a milkshake also for the kids. And I cooked some strawberries with some sugar. That's part of my process of making a strawberry milkshake, for example. Some of the strawberries get cooked, but not too much. The strawberries kind of get soft, but they do not turn into a complete mush. But they're sweetened with the sugar during the cooking process. And when I make the milkshake, that cooked strawberry mixture, or the cooked strawberries, I should say, with some of the juice, go into the blender along with a bit of fresh strawberries. And then, you know, I adjust the consistency and the sweetness as necessary. But I had some of that juice from cooking the strawberries left. And so that went on the bottom of the plate and on three pucks of those syrniki on top, and powdered sugar on top of the syrniki. And then each of those pucks received a raspberry on top. And so the kids were very happy with that. The only thing that I won't do anymore is I used kefir in my recipe when I mixed the mixture I was describing for the syrniki. And the kefir I chose to use this time was flavored, strawberry flavored. But it's not the best tasting kefir. In fact, I think I like the plain one, and only the plain one. And I found one store where there's plain kefir that's labeled Greek style. In fact, I think I found a couple of Greek style labeled kefirs, and I've tried both, and one of them is far better than the other. And I've been sticking to that for the most part, and this time my daughter, Inessa, and I, my daughter, decided, why don't we try this strawberry-flavored one? And it just doesn't taste great. And so I think the syrniki kind of got that taste imparted into them, and it wasn't the best. But still, they ate it. So that was a success. And I have room to improve. And then, of course, the other thing I made were these things called kotleti. And I may have talked about kotleti before on some of the podcasts. But that's another dish that is a staple in Russian cooking and all over Soviet Union. And it's not an easy one to master. I am still trying to master it, and I've been trying for decades, probably close to 20 years now. And when my grandma made it, or usually my mom, when they make it, it's a delicious product, and I tend to get results that vary, not always the best, but I must say this time the kids were saying that these kotleti are delicious, and I'm beside myself with happiness. And I think that the dish may have originated in Persia, which is modern-day Iran. I spoke with a Persian man once who saw me eat one for lunch myself, and he asked me, "What is this?" And I told him the Russian word kotleta, and I described generally how it's made, and he said, "Oh, that sounds like a Persian dish." And in fact, we Persians, Iranians, also call it kotlet. And we had a discussion how the word sounds like cutlet, which in the United States actually refers to a cut of meat. But this isn't meat, or let's say it's not a cut of meat. Kotleti are made of ground meat. It could be beef, pork. I made mine with dark and white ground turkey meat mixed with veal. But I also often do chicken, turkey, and pork together. And the process of making them in many ways resembles meatballs. Now, there are many ways to make meatballs, but you can mix meats together for meatballs, or you can just go with one kind of meat. And there's breadcrumbs involved, and some spices if you want. And it is a creative process, but there are probably as many recipes as there are cooks in the world. But that's why it's so non-trivial to master these things. But anyway, I managed to make these things, these kotleti for the kids, and apparently succeeded big time. And it just went on and on. And then we did some chores here, and then went for ice cream, and then went for some candy at a candy store. And of course, I think we started the day, or perhaps that was yesterday. I think today we started the day with some crepes, but I did not make them. We went out and ate some crepes. And then we drank some freshly squeezed juices at the farmer's market. And then later there was ice cream and candy. And later in the day, we repeated the successful kotleti and mashed potatoes and cucumber tomato salad. And we finished that off with two kinds of crumble, apple crumble and blueberry crumble that were slightly warmed up a la mode, which means with a dollop of ice cream on top. So it was some sort of a parade of deliciousness for the 2 days. And the candy came from this candy shop. And one of the things this candy shop sells besides candy is something that's in French called pain de fruits. And it's very popular in Russia as well. And in Russia, the word for it is marmalade. But of course, when you start saying things in different languages and they start to sound like something familiar, marmalade in English is not at all what the stuff is that we bought at the store. Marmalade, I think in the United States, is something like jam, that you might eat with a spoon or something. This pâte fou is not hard, but it's kind of gelatinous. It's made, I think, with gelatin. I think you take, for example, some juice, maybe freshly squeezed berry juice, and you bring it up to heat, and you add gelatin, and it solidifies, and then you can actually cut it with a knife. You could cut it into whatever shapes you want, maybe say squares, and then you coat each square in some sugar. And if it's good quality juice from ripe berries, and you didn't use too much gelatin or too little, then you get delicious taste and delicious texture with a bit of sugar coating. And it's almost like eating berries in this sort of pretty form. And so we got some of that, and that reminded us of some of the stuff that we used to have. I used to have when I was a kid. I was growing up in Soviet Union, and our children have tasted it as well, because we've exposed them to these sorts of things. So it turned into some sort of a culinary excursion for a couple of days. And of course, that was just part of it. Besides that, there were some playgrounds, and the kids did a bunch of playing. And I've heard a bunch of music playing in my daughter's room when all three of them were busy, I don't know, doing some performances, or I think at one point they came out and asked me to install an app with which to make movies. So they must have been making movies. So there was a lot going on. And that's just these last 2 days. Not too long before that, the kids had spring break. And Inessa had only 1 week at her school. Rafa and Amira had 2 weeks. And we met up near San Diego during the first week and visited Legoland. Rafa and Amira went to Montana for the second week. But Legoland was fun. And we also visited La Jolla. And La Jolla was very pretty. And the weather was nice. And the kids got to spend time at the beaches. And later, towards the end of that day, they came back to the hotel where we stayed, and Essa and I, my wife, and swam in the swimming pool. So that was a bunch of activities there. And then on the way to San Diego, Rafa and Amira flew with their dad, and Inessa, my wife, and I drove. So we turned our trip into a road trip. And on the way there, we stopped in Solvang for the night. And we stayed at a cute hotel that I think was wine themed, because Solvang is close to the wine region. In that part of the state of California. And Inessa loved the hotel. It also had pool, and she just liked the hotel. And of course, Solvang is sort of a Scandinavian themed town. And it's kind of fun for kids. And I enjoyed a Swedish pancake, which isn't all that easy to find unless you know places. So that was good. And then on the way back from San Diego, we decided to stop in Monterey and visit the aquarium. And that was a lot of fun for Inessa as well. The aquarium, that's a special place for Inessa particularly, because Inessa probably, like many children, is into otters. And of course, Monterey Aquarium is big on otters. Otters, as I understand it, are the main attraction. And this time, we stayed in Monterey, right in the Cannery Row at the Intercontinental, right next to the aquarium. They specifically planned this, and in fact, the idea was to get into the aquarium for or in time for the feeding of the otters. And we also, and this is slightly besides the point, but we also stayed at the Intercontinental, which is a very fancy hotel, and I was able to use some points, I believe. I can't remember exactly how or what, to get a pretty good deal. And it's a fancy hotel, especially after the hotel that we stayed at near Legoland, near San Diego, because we thought we were going to have our dog with us. We ended up not having our dog Lando with us. But oftentimes you go and you stay at the dog-friendly hotels that are known for being the nicest hotels. And so it was sort of a place right next to the highway. It was noisy back there near Legoland in that hotel, and the room wasn't particularly nice, and none of us really liked it, and Inessa especially so. And so Intercontinental was many, many steps up, and Inessa was very happy with that. And then, of course, we went to the aquarium to see the otters, and in time for the feeding. And in fact, we stamped our hands and were able to go in and out of the aquarium. So we were at the aquarium twice that day for two separate feedings of the otters. Um, But to kind of step back a little, at Intercontinental, the room had a fireplace, and it had a swimming pool, and a hot tub, and when we first arrived that night before our stay at the hotel at Intercontinental, we ate, I think it's some place called Bubba's, I don't remember, and it was okay. And then that night or the following day, I think it was that night, we went for dessert at Intercontinental itself, overlooking the waterfront. And it was very fancy. And Inessa probably felt like a princess, which is sort of how all three kids must have felt, actually also during the sleepover, with the parade of the dishes. I don't know if that's proper grammar, with the parade of dishes that I was delivering to the table. And the ice cream and fancy candy and just overall fun times. And we don't spoil the kids all the time, but once in a while we take the opportunity and make their lives happy. Or I should say their lives are happy all the time, but we take an opportunity to make it extra, extra, extra happy and special. But we do teach them and expect them to be good people and hardworking. If there's one thing when we do the spoiling, it is not to make it so that they get used to this kind of lifestyle and expect that to happen on a daily basis. It's sometimes unsustainable, and even if it were unsustainable, it can cause kids to grow up into adults with skewed values. So all three girls, Rafa and Inessa and Amira, they're good people, and it's amazing to see. And even when they get spoiled, they do enjoy it, but you can see how they get back to the daily life that isn't exactly a spoiling, but something that we might all call the daily grind. And they work and they study, and they do well in school, and they have plenty of activities, and they are ambitious, and they are achievers, and it's just amazing to see. And for me, what's important is that they're compassionate, they're empathetic. They care for each other, even when, as kids always do, they get into fights or needle each other. You can easily correct them, and they will go and talk to each other and apologize and understand how the other person feels. And that's the most important stuff. And I remember, this reminds me about feeling. We suddenly were driving, or we were driving and suddenly started talking. I think the day was over and the sleepover was over, and all three girls and I were in the car getting back to our houses, getting ready for the school to start the following day. And as we drive, we were talking about grandma in Latvia and how these past 2 days were so great. And I think Inessa said it would be greater if it could last a week. And I think I responded by saying, well, we'll go see Tita, grandma, for a whole month. And it'll be a vacation that will last an entire month. It'll be like a sleepover that stretches an entire month. And that's going to be a ton of fun. And Rafa said that it also is kind of unfair that it's only a month. It used to be that we could do a couple of months. Then it became 6 weeks, and now it's only 4 weeks. And Rafa kind of felt that it's unfair for Inessa, because Rafa and Amira are able to also go and see Tita in the winter. Inessa couldn't. And I sort of asked, what's the point of complaining? We can still enjoy, even if it's 4 weeks, enjoy the time with grandma, with Tita. And what I loved is that Rafa said, well, just the point is so that we can all understand and feel that it's unfair. It feels unfair when out of the entire year you only get the 4 weeks to see Tita, that you would love to see a lot more of. And I agreed that it feels unfair, and probably feels unfair to Inessa if Rafa and Amira can see more of Tita but she can't. And maybe we can figure some way out to let Inessa, and in fact Rafa and Amira, all three girls, to see more of their grandma. Grandma's aging. There isn't, you know, infinite time left to see her and spend time with her, and it's very important. So we'll see if we can make that happen somehow. And so that's just about how these kids are. They understand the feelings. They understand how the other person can feel. They're not selfish. They think about each other. And that's important to me. But I digress. Back to Monterey. And back to the Intercontinental Hotel. And Inessa was very happy that she got to stay at a fancy hotel. And it was sort of spoiling Inessa too again. And I made a point by saying that, yes, we didn't like the previous hotel, but I wouldn't only go for fancy hotels, because, well, first of all, it can get very expensive. And second of all, even if there was plenty of money, it's very easy to kind of get detached from reality and live a fancy life and forget about the rest of the people. And so we sort of agreed on that. And then the aquarium, the otters. It was a pleasure to see Nessa's face light up. She was communicating with those otters. We managed to get there on time. We only stayed one night at Intercontinental, but I was able to extend the checkout time, so we had some extra time until 1 p.m., I think. So the first otter feeding was at 10:30 in the morning, I think, 10:30 a.m. And it gets crowded. Everybody wants to see the feeding. So we got there early enough that Ines was able to stand at the window, and which is as close as you can get, and watch the whole thing unfold. And the first time, for some reason, all the otters were congregating, not at the window at which Ines was standing, but the one to the right, kind of in the corner there. And I don't know why. And Anessa thought, well, here I'm standing here at this window, and they're all there. Well, sometimes that happens. But what was pretty awesome, we came back to the aquarium later, and there was a second feeding. And I don't recall what time the second feeding was, but I think we may have already checked out of the hotel by then, and simply spent some more time in Monterey and went back later. And the second feeding was sometime in the PM hours, maybe around 1:30, was it? Or was it closer to 3? I can't remember. But what was really amazing, during the second feeding, the otters got food in what looked to me like these bowls with, you know, like rubber balls with holes in them. If anybody who's listening is a dog owner, there's this rubber thing for dogs called Kong, and it's got a hole in the center, and you can stuff, say, like peanut butter into that hole and give it to the dog, and then the dog has to work at it to get the peanut butter out. And it's kind of, you know, work for dog, for the dog, you know, trying to figure out how to get the peanut butter out, and keeps the dog occupied and probably exercises their brain cells and so on and so forth. Similar thing with otters. These balls were stuffed with some food, and the way otters get stuff out of holes, they grab it and, say, grab the ball and start banging it against the wall to knock the food out of the hole in the ball. Well, this one otter swam up to the window where Inessa was standing, right in front of Inessa, laying on his back with the ball in its hands, and was banging the ball against the window, practically against Inessa's face. And it was adorable, and Inessa was laughing. And we'll never forget that. So it was a very memorable trip to the Monterey Aquarium this time. And so that was a very successful trip, I think, to Solvang, to this Dutch / Swedish / Scandinavian town, to then San Diego and Legoland and La Jolla, and then back to Monterey and Intercontinental and the aquarium, of course. And then I mentioned we got stamps on our hands at the aquarium so we could sort of go in and out freely during the day. So we got hungry, we left, we ate some crepes. They were pretty good crepes. And came back and, of course, communed with the otters. And then, of course, we went through the entire aquarium. It wasn't just the otters we went to see, we saw all the rest of it. Jellyfish we saw, I think we took some videos and photos, and they're very majestic, kind of mesmerizing, pretty things. Then at one point we got outside at the aquarium. You can get on onto this sort of open air kind of place, and they've got these giant binoculars, I guess, installed there, and you can observe the bay. And Inessa spotted otters in the water, in the wild. And I can't remember again, but I called them a school of otters, perhaps, which is wrong. You say a school of fish. And I don't know what you call a group of otters. Maybe it's a band of otters. Ines immediately corrected me, and of course I can't remember already. But she loved seeing otters in the wild. And then we saw seals. And it was just a bunch of excitement and learning. And there was a plan to try to go to Santa Cruz and camp overnight and then go back home. But the weather was so bad that we decided not to do it. But instead, we drove Inessa directly to Nico. Nico is her friend. And the two girls had a sleepover at Nico's house and camped, quote unquote, in an actual tent, as I understand it, in one of the rooms at Nico's house, which was amazing. And then the following day, they spent the entire day together. Nico had a class. Inessa went and saw Nico in the, in the class. And then I don't know what all they did during the day, but it was an entire day of entertainment. And finally, Inessa got home. And the next day was school. And so that was, for Inessa, an entire complete week of travels and sleepover. And then not too long afterwards, we just had a couple of days of sleepover and playgrounds and eating delicious food and taking care of dog Lando, ice cream, candies, fresh juice at farmer's market, apple crumble, blueberry crumble. The list just goes on and on. It's amazing. Milkshake with strawberries makes your head spin. And at some point, maybe, as far as cooking goes, maybe the three girls, or maybe to begin with, Inessa and myself, we'll try to get into patachou. It's this type of dough. It's airy and fluffy, kind of empty inside. It's sort of a shell. In fact, most people know what éclair is. Éclair is patachou filled with pastry cream. So maybe that's another culinary experiment that we will try and add to the repertoire, and it'll become another thing to delight children with. I've already tried pastry cream and succeeded at that. Now I just need to succeed at patachou. Maybe Inessa can help me. Maybe Rafa and Amir can help. And then we will start making those and stuffing them with pastry cream. Or there's another version where you can stuff it with that farmer's cheese that I described earlier. And you can sweeten that farmer's cheese or mix it with a little bit of whipped cream and make that the stuffing for the potter shoe. In fact, I wonder if Rafa and Amira could provide help because they go to school at Lycée, the French school. And I know, can't remember how far back, but Rafa, I believe, took some cooking classes at Lycée as an after-school program. And I don't know if they covered pot au chou or not, but I suspect Rafa knows what pot au chou is and maybe knows how to make it even, or at least has some idea. And maybe Amira knows too. And Ines is always very happy to help in the kitchen. So there's more stuff to create and to try and taste. And then I just remembered that I've started getting into sourdough, and I made a loaf of bread that's sourdough bread. And it came out pretty good. I'm still experimenting with that. I have been trying to make just regular white bread. In fact, I've been trying to make baguettes, and there were some baguettes that came out phenomenal. In fact, a couple of times I made some baguettes that I think I preferred to ones that you can buy at the store, which sort of surprised even me. I remember standing there in the kitchen and eating it, and Ines and Mary ate it. And a couple of times, actually, Rafa and Amira were here, and they ate it. And I myself remember standing there and thinking, I can't believe I made it. And, of course, the difficulty with these things is you can succeed once, you can succeed twice, three times. The hard part is consistency. Succeeding all the time is the difficult part. So the baguettes haven't come out that well since. And it's hard to know why. It seems like I'm doing everything exactly the same. But I'm saying all of this because it's just something else to work on. And perhaps for me, food is one way to delight people and kids specifically and spoil them with, and kind of fun. And so that's just more to work on, I guess. As kids get older, maybe they'll get into it. And who knows, maybe at some point they will start reciprocating and us adults will start getting some delicious things made by kids when they're older. Inessa, for example, for the longest time now, knows how to make, well, maybe not an omelet, but definitely scrambled eggs. And Inessa makes probably the best waffles that I would ever want to eat. And I don't know, I never asked Rafa and Amir, but I think they might agree that Inessa's waffles are delicious. And these aren't some sort of waffles made from some box mix. She does everything from scratch, and she's been doing this for, oh, I don't remember how long now. She's only 9 years old. She starts with flour. She mixes her own batter and cooks them in the waffle iron herself. Sets up the table nice and pretty. Fork on the left, knife on the right, napkins and everything. I mean, it's like restaurant style presentation, and there's all kinds of condiments that will come with those waffles, jams, Nutella, you name it. And it's delicious. So we'll see. Maybe kids will start delighting us. Maybe that's the whole point of it all. We delight and spoil them, and then they delight and spoil us. I don't know. Does it work that way? I hope so. But we love them, and they love us. And each other. And that's very important. So, I think I've said a lot. There were a couple of things that I thought about that I forgot to mention, and one of them was that during the 2-day sleepover that just ended, Rafa, Mira, and Anessa got one of the nights to be what we call a whatever you want night. And really, it's no restrictions. You want to stay up all night, stay up all night. Probably the only requirements might be not to make too much noise, making sure others can sleep. And they said Inessa made it till 2 a.m., but the other two fell asleep early, which was funny. I think they watched cartoons or movies or something on their iPads. So that's, you know, two packed days of fun, and then more fun, and then some more endless fun. The other thing that came up during play at home, not sure how, they were playing with our dog Lando. He's a boy, and somehow or other they were joking, all three of them, with Lando, that Lando has a girlfriend, or asking him, do you have a girlfriend, dog Lando? And then the name of a girl dog came up that we know, Tater Tot. We love Tater Tot. Tater Tot is a beautiful chow chow. She belongs to Fee, her owner. We like Tater Tot. And Lando and Tater Tot like each other. And so I guess Lando is a boy, Tater Tot is a girl, and therefore Tater Tot is Lando's girlfriend, or so the three kids say. And so they were kind of teasing Lando. And at one point, they quickly came up with a way to figure out whether Lando's girlfriend is Tater Tot, or this other girl dog in the park, Wilma loves Lando. Wilma also has two or three dogs that she's absolutely in love with. Lando is one of them. But it's hilarious to watch Wilma around Lando, because Wilma just won't leave Lando alone. She hugs him and kisses him and licks his face, and it's just nonstop, and it's unbelievable and hilarious. So I think Rafa and Inessa, or maybe all three, Rafa, Inessa, Amira, came up with this test for dog Lando here at home. They took two treats. I think Inessa laid them on the floor, maybe 2-3 feet apart. Well, Rafa, I think, was holding Lando. And then at some point, Inessa told Rafa to let go of Lando. And they decided to see which treat Lando is going to go to first. And they, ahead of time, decided that if he goes to the one treat on the one side, then his girlfriend is the one dog. Or if it's the other treat, then it's the other dog. And I guess the treat on Lando's left would mean Tater Tot. And the treat on Lando's right would mean Wilma. And Lando went to the left. And so Tater Tot it is. And then we went to the park shortly afterward. And lo and behold, there's Tater Tot. And the three kids were beside themselves with joy and were screaming, "Lando, Lando, go say hello to your girlfriend, Tater Tot." And Fee, of course, was there. And, of course, other people with dogs. There was Lindsay. And Lindsay's dog is Willard. And he's one of the biggest Bernese mountain dogs that I have ever seen, I think. Willard lost some weight, but he was up to about 160 pounds. He's probably a little less than that, maybe closer to 150. Lindsay said he lost about 9 pounds recently, so he might be about 151 or so. So it was funny to watch kids tease Lando about Tater Tot being his girlfriend, and Fee and her boyfriend were laughing about it, and Lindsay was laughing, and then it was very funny to watch the three girls play with Willard, because Willard is probably weighs about as much as all three of them together. And Amira, the youngest, was trying to run around with Willard, and Willard would run, and it would be like looking at a small child trying to run around and play with a little horsey. So that was kind of funny. But those were the 2-3 things that I remembered and wanted to add. But I think this podcast is probably now one of the longest ones already, and I should wrap up and think of everything else that I missed and leave it for upcoming podcasts. So with that, thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Don't forget to visit SergeyBloom.com and come back here for more soothing episodes. Thank you.